though he's spending an awful lot of time in the volunteer state, where he'll be this weekend. You can find his work for USA Today online, usatoday.com. Follow on Twitter. Use the handle at George Schroeder. Mr. Schroeder, a fine Wednesday to you, sir. How's it going?
It's good. How are you?
All is well. All is well. Still here. They still pay me to do this. No complaints.
Yeah.
Last week, you had your five games to watch, Florida State-Louisville, and we were talking all week how it's going to be great to catch that in between our duck coverage, and we talked about what a serious blow Florida State had when their stud safety Derwin James went out with a knee. And then it was 63-10 in the fourth quarter.
Right.
But my word, the level of shock, or, you know, at this point in the season, sometimes we just don't know the caliber of certain teams.
Well, look, I think there was a little bit of a snowball. In fact, I think Florida State's actually pretty good. What we didn't know is that Louisville's really, really good. You know, and if Derwin James is there, that score's probably only 42-10 and I'm kidding. In the fourth quarter. But
got it.
Lamar Jackson's really good. Bobby Petrino, people don't like him very much, and I get that, but he's as good a football coach as there is offensively. I think the revelation to me was Louisville's defense. I mean, they really made DeAndre Francois look like the inexperienced guy that he is, when what we had seen from him before was a guy who looked sort of poised beyond his years. So, and here's the thing, too. Well, I think Florida State's really, really good and is still potentially, you know, you might look at them in late November and say, that's a playoff-worthy type of team. I think they're still that kind of team. When you lose, 63-20, and everybody knows it was 63-10, and you scored twice with, you know, inside the last 6 minutes, it's sort of hard. That's a little bit different than sort of overcoming the loss to Virginia Tech that Ohio State, you know, lost, or Oklahoma losing inexplicably to a bad Texas team, but it wasn't a blowout. That's a little bit different. You know, even if Louisville turns out to be really good, it's still a little bit different.
So if there are no upsets this week, would you pitch your bosses to go to Death Valley for Louisville-Clemson, or would you prefer to make the trip to Seattle for Washington hosting Stanford?
What was the first option again?
This is a week from this weekend.
Yeah.
Louisville at Clemson.
You threw me off because I was like, for some reason, I'm not getting to go to either of those. And then I was like, wait a second, they're not this week. I think Washington-Stanford obviously it's a Friday night game, but I think that's a really fun game to watch. I don't know that we know much about Washington yet. We may know after Saturday because they just haven't played anybody, but the early signs are really good. I mean, you know, and that's part of the thing with college football, though, is we just don't know. Stanford, though, we've seen some of them, and I think it's like, okay, those guys, you know, they're good at quarterback. We already knew about Christian McCaffrey, but now that Burns is playing well at quarterback, I really like those guys. That would be the one I'd want to see because, you know, if the Huskies are what they think they might be, that could be a really entertaining game.
Yeah, I think defensively they'll be really good. We'll see what they've got on the other side. 2 years ago in Salt Lake City against Oregon, Utah's wideout, Kalen Clay, had a long touchdown, but he forgot something to carry the ball into the end zone. Last week, Cal's Vic and Wary got a TD pulled off the board. So this is a two-parter because you wrote about it. What did Sonny Dykes come to as far as a conclusion? And you had an incident that it seemed nobody noticed in a game you covered.
Yeah, it's kind of wild. I was at the Ohio State-Oklahoma game, and, you know, Joe Mixon, who's, the five-star running back who's been in trouble, we won't get into that part of it, he's a fantastic talent, returned a kick return, 97 yards for a touchdown and sometime in the first half. The only problem was, at about yard 95 and a half, he dropped the football. And nobody caught it. The Big Ten officials who were the on-field crew in the non-conference matchup didn't catch it. And the Big 12 replay officials, of course, they didn't catch it. We've seen that they apparently, I'm not really sure what they do, but it's not watching replays this year.
Nice.
But it's amazing. So the people, the Fox telecast caught it at some point. And I don't know when they caught it because obviously I was at the game, but it wasn't very long before my Twitter feed was flooded with, screen captures of, look at this. And then, you know, Mike Pereira is the former official who's, you know, Fox's guru.
Sure.
Was talking about it. And it's an amazing thing that was not caught. And then, of course, the Cal thing where the running back dropped the ball early, too. And at some point, you're like, do you guys not pay any attention to what's happened all over college football? And I guess the idea is, I guess the answer is no, they don't. I think we just assume that players are aware of stuff the way we're all aware of it as sort of college football fans, or in your case, in my case, guys that cover college football. We watch, you know, game day final. We watch college football live. We read stuff. We pay attention to it. I guess those two guys hadn't paid any attention to sort of the Clemson kid that did the same thing a week earlier and cost them a touchdown in what became, you know, they ended up winning. But I guess they hadn't paid any attention to it. Here's my other thing. Where did this come from? I know the publicized instances of, you're right, Kalen Clay, you know, DeSean Jackson back in the day.
Right.
When did this become a thing? The idea of not dropping it before, but dropping it as you reach the end zone. When did that become a deal?
No.
And I asked Sonny Dykes, the Cal coach, about that on Sunday afternoon. And I said, is that something you're like, I mean, because I don't see it in the NFL. Is that something you're seeing, you know, at the high school level? He goes, no, I'm really not seeing it. I don't know where it comes from.
Here's an odd, it just dawned on me, and I know I'm being sarcastic, but college players can't celebrate in the end zone, so are they thinking we could celebrate before the end zone and try and get away with it?
I guess maybe that's what it is. I mean, it's sort of like the, I've been here so many times, this is just, I'll drop the ball. I don't really get it.
It seems weird.
You know, Sonny Dykes told me there is a new team rule at Cal, which is, you will not drop the ball if you score a touchdown. You will hand it to the official, which, frankly, that ought to be everybody's rule all the time. It's just the right way to go about it. But, you know, maybe I'm that old curmudgeon. I don't get it. I mean, it's a purely selfish act if you do it right as you cross the goal line, because what if somebody thinks you dropped it before you got there? And if you actually do drop it before you get there, it's just goofy. How about this? How about if you're going to drop the ball, tell yourself I'm going to drop it three steps into the end zone. I mean, how hard is that to do and still look cool?
No, it's logic defying for sure. Obviously, we mentioned where you were, Oklahoma hosting Ohio State. Sooners needed it to stay in the playoff picture, but a chance for them young Buckeyes to prove that their talent is ready now.
Yep.
And I'll tell you what, I was home. The Oregon game was over. I was like, this is going to be awesome. And it's over at halftime. I mean, you were there. You saw Noah Brown. But, man, was that a bit surprising or more impressive by where Urban Meyer has these Buckeyes already?
Well, a little of both. Now, I mean, the one thing is, as you said, Oklahoma needed to win to stay in the playoff. And had they won, they would have to stay in the playoff chase. But what was revealed was the gap between them and one of the best teams in college football, and that's what Ohio State already is. Oklahoma is not a playoff-caliber contender. Now, had they played, you know, some other softer non-conference schedule, they'd be 3-0 and ranked number 3 or whatever, and we'd be going, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, the good news is we got to see sort of the gap. Against Houston, there's not really a gap, but Houston outplayed them. But against Ohio State, there's a serious talent gap between them and Oklahoma, and we got to see it. The other thing that was really interesting was on the Ohio State side was just how quickly they reloaded. I mean, we knew those guys were talented, or they were reputed to be talented by the recruiting rankings, but the fact that they played to their talent, in the first time, you know, 30 players were either freshmen or redshirt freshmen on the travel roster, right?
Wow.
It's the first time they've been on the road, and they went on the road, and it wasn't like they went to Purdue. You know, no offense to the 3 Boilermaker fans in your audience, but that, you know, they went to an Oklahoma State team, I mean, Oklahoma team that was ranked, and you know, basically 90,000 screaming people who don't like them, and they just put it on, and it's an amazing performance about not just their talent, but how well prepared they were. And I actually think, And a lot of this has to do maybe with JT Barrett, too, by the way. I actually think you were looking at one of the top two teams in college football. Now, everybody loves Louisville. Everybody loves Alabama. I don't be stunned if Ohio State wins the whole thing.
at this point, why would you be surprised?
I mean, yeah, I mean, we see every week and we overdo it every week. I get that. I just – and were they that many points better than Oklahoma, three touchdowns better? No, but they're a good two touchdowns better. And I think they're a good touchdown better than a whole lot of teams in that top 10. And I think they're good enough to play with and beat anybody in the top 10 on a given day. Are they going to? I don't know. I guess we'll see. They've got a tough road to hoe in the Big Ten, and especially the Big Ten East.
Talking with George Schroeder of USA Today. You know, 3 weeks in, sometimes you get a hint, but nothing etched in stone. And you wrote about the Big 12, the two Sooner losses, the Central Michigan debacle over Oklahoma State, Cal beat Texas, only Baylor and West Virginia are unbeaten. You covered a lot in your article, be it rankings, officiating, head-to-head against other leagues. This is a pretty rough start for the Big 12. What stuck out to you?
Well, they're just not very good. And here's the thing. And they might have a bunch of good teams, and Oklahoma might end up still being the class of the league. And by good, I mean just good, kind of, you know, ranked 12th to 25th type of teams. They might have three or four of those. What they don't have is anybody who's elite at all. And that's what I think was proven. Now, I mean, you know, Baylor's unbeaten. West Virginia's unbeaten. West Virginia beat a mediocre Missouri team. Good for them. Baylor hadn't played anybody. And because they didn't play anybody in the non-conference – and everybody else in the non-conference lost basically any high-profile game except Texas over Notre Dame, then any win Baylor gets over other Big 12 schools, even if they're, you know, running the table, and I don't think they are because they sort of halfway struggled with some of those non-conference opponents they played, but any win they get is sort of devalued by how poorly the league fared in the non-conference. And so I think you're looking at a scenario where I think Oklahoma may well win the league. A lot of that depends on mentally whether they're going to be able to get up for it. I still think they might be the class of the league. And that just says to you and to me that it's not a great league. That's what it says. But whoever wins it, you know, I guess if Baylor was 12-0, it'd be hard to deny him a spot in the playoff. But the problem is the context is, wow, it's not a very good league. We've all seen that in the non-conference, which is all we have to judge it on. And now if you go beat up on everybody in the league, what does that really mean?
No, that's
anyway,
interesting. And
I do not expect that to happen. I think what's going to happen is everybody's going to, you know, they're all sort of, there's three or four kind of halfway decent teams and all kind of beat each other a couple times, and somebody will emerge and go to the Sugar Bowl, but they won't be anywhere close to the playoffs.
Right, and of course Baylor has to go to Austin, Norman, and Morgantown, so we'll deal with that later. So you're going to be up Rocky Top. It's a rivalry game-ish. Though the Gators have won 11 in a row, and both teams kind of wounded. Florida lost their starting quarterback, Luke Del Rio. They've got, you mentioned Purdue earlier, one of the Boilermaker transfers, Austin Appleby. Now, you know, you look at this move at quarterback, and it's necessitated by an injury. Have you learned anything? You talked about it. What do we know about Appleby running this Gator offense?
I don't know much about him at all. Here's what I know is that two SEC powers have quarterbacks who lost the Purdue quarterback derby. Purdue. I made light of them earlier when talking about Ohio State. And the reason is because they've been the dregs of the Big Ten for years now. And if Appleby there and Danny Etling at LSU are starting for those respective situations. And look, I understand that in Florida's case, it's because Luke Del Rio got hurt. But it doesn't say a whole lot for either of those schools. It's a pretty wild deal. Now, what does that mean for Florida and Tennessee? I don't really know. I'm expecting a really ugly game. I'm actually headed to Knoxville. I'm expecting a really ugly game. And, you know, who knows what that means. Did you know that Tennessee has not beaten – Florida since 2004. There's an 11-game win streak by the Gators. It's very similar to what Oregon and Washington have going.
No, I read that, and I heard it on SportsCenter, and I went back and double-checked them because I was like, that doesn't sound right. But, you know, we talked about Tennessee in the preseason. They had their best season last year since Phil Fulmer ran the program in 07. They got a scare against App State. They needed a fourth quarter TD to put away the Bobcats of Ohio. Their quarterback's been inconsistent. So is there a more difficult team to get a gauge on than the Volunteers right now?
No, I don't know that there is. I mean, first of all, they are banged up. But secondly, you know, when you look back now at the Virginia Tech game, you realize they corralled five turnovers, and that really made them look better maybe than they actually were, changed the game completely, and they haven't looked good in the other two games. So I will say this. The only handle I have on them is this, and I think we talked about this on the air. I was not buying Tennessee in the offseason. I wanted to have them prove it to me. But any of the media hype going into the season about sort of like, okay, not only could they win the SEC East, but maybe this is the year they could challenge for a playoff berth by winning the SEC, at least through three games, and teams change and morph, but I haven't seen anything approaching that at all, period.
So you're going to be headed up there. It's going to be insane, but we're not sure what we're going to see. So we'll wish you safe travels. Check them out, USAtoday.com, on Twitter, at George Schroeder. Always look forward to him starting our Wednesday. George, thanks a lot. Enjoy Rocky Top.
All right, man, thanks. I always enjoy Rocky Top.
All right, take it easy.